Thanks for listening. Join us for A Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at 3 p.m. at the Florida Theater, or Tuesday, December 23rd at 7:30 p.m. in Lewis Auditorium on the Flagler College campus. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojax.com. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine.
It's summer in the ancient city. The year is 1976. I'm on an end-of-the-year field trip with my fifth-grade school safety patrol, keeping the corners safe one crosswalk at a time. I'm stuck in the middle spot of the backseat of our oak-paneled station wagon with my two buddies from the neighborhood, Steve Shiflett and Tom Jackson. All three of our moms are in the front seat, chattering away 100 miles a clip with the windows rolled down, and an 8-track of Neil Diamond is up so loud the dashboard is vibrating. It's summer in the ancient city. We gun down 95 and take the exit into town. There's a kind of electricity and wonder to the whole place. The Fountain of Youth, the old jail, Ripley's Believe It or Not. Talk about finding an 11-year-old sweet spot. I was immediately consumed with the all-important question of the day. How will I spend my souvenir money? Truth be told, I was never much of a saver. So my field trip money was in the red. Steve was the kid on the block who always had the best of everything, and he was always carrying large.
My dad slipped me $50 last night after he saw my report card.
Tom had a paper route in the afternoon delivering for the Jacksonville Journal.
I got about 35, give or take.
And me, I was dependent on my mom.
You can have $5, take it or leave it.
I'll take it. $5 to her and my dad, children of the Depression, that was a small fortune.
And you have to set the table, clear, rinse, wash, and dry for a whole week.
Why?
Why? Why is the letter before Z? Because I said so. And I don't want any kind of sour face or you try and pass it off on your sister. It's no dice, comprende?
Yeah, okay.
And don't spend it all the first 5 minutes you get there. Take a look at everything and then decide what you want.
That was my mom keeping it real. It's summer in the ancient city. We round the corner into the first stop, and I am greeted by a sensory overload. This is too much to take in. Rows and rows of really cool stuff I feel I must have. So begins my lifelong love affair with St. Augustine. As we made our way through the streets and shops of the old quarter, I kept a running tab in my head. After walking 3 blocks and visiting half a dozen shops, I'd spent $500 in my head. Once in a while, my mom would see me lingering over a rubber alligator or a fake Indian knife and purr.
Remember what I said.
Everywhere I turn, there's something to look at. Later, I reconnect with my mom and her buddies. They're drinking cheap wine in a cafe. Yes, parents used to do things like that in the 70s. They drank wine and laughed. They let their kids loose on a place. As we're driving home and the sky is a hazy orange and blue, just before I fall asleep with my face smushed against the window, I realize I haven't spent a penny. Good times. It's summer in the ancient city. Good evening. We are so thrilled you could join us for our first official Swamp Radio road trip. This week marks the anniversary of our first show ever. We wanted to start off our second season in a place full of personality and history and friendly faces. We're going to spend the next 90 minutes exploring the ancient city. Hopefully you pack some sunscreen, a bottle of water, and some souvenir money. It's summer in the ancient city, and we're going to take a sunset stroll. Y'all come too.
You've tuned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun, homemade mixture of music and phraseology from the greater North Florida region, also known as the 904. Tonight on the show, we'll take a trip back in time with historian Wayne Wood, groove on the music of Side Rill, and hippo owner Stephen DeMare is going to share the secret to making a Chipotle peach and jalapeno popsicle. Plus offerings from author Laura Lee Smith and the usual suspects, Maya, Kevin, David, Simone, and Tony, a.k.a. the Retread Players. And yours truly, Andy Nance. Let's give it up for the Swamp Radio Band, Craig Spurko on keyboard. the lovely Lauren Fincham on guitar and vocals, Brian Holman on pedal steel, and sitting in tonight is fiddle player Philip Pan.
Can we have another hand for that wonderful band? You've turned your podcast dial to Swamp Radio. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, the Willow Act.
Sleep tight, my love. You need your rest. You need to find the time to renew, to do what you do best. 'Cause what you do best is most everything. Walk in the room and I'm compelled to sing. You are the stars and I am the eye behind the lens that just points at the sky. As you shine through the night, my love, sleep tight. Sleep tight, my love. You need your rest. You need to find the time to renew, to do what you do best. 'Cause what you do best is most everything. You walk in the room and I'm compelled to sing. You are the stars and I am the eye behind the lens that just points at the sky. As you shine through the night, my love, sleep tight.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Have a great night. Enjoy the show.
The Willow Axe.
Well, Wayne Wood's infectious enthusiasm for all things Northeast Florida has led him on a lifelong study of the area. He's the author of several compelling books, which depict life in rural North Florida over the past century.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Wayne Wood. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Ian.
Wayne, when I approached you about appearing on the summer show, you said you had some interesting and quirky tales about St. Augustine, which not everyone may know about.
Well, that's right. Beyond all of those ponderous and ancient gray stone walls of the historic city of St. Augustine, there lies a quirky, amusing, and not so serious side to this old city's history. What more could you expect from a town named after Augustine de Hippo, the patron saint of brewers, who famously prayed, "God, grant me the chastity and continence, but not right now." One of the most important early tourist figures in St. Augustine was Franklin W. Smith, himself a Yankee and indeed a friend of Abraham Lincoln, who stopped by to visit his in-laws in their winter home in the 1870s and decided to take up residence. When Smith decided to build his own winter home in St. Augustine, he vowed to construct a dwelling that would surpass all that had come before ever in the history of Florida, perhaps second in grandeur only to the Castillo de San Marcos itself. He traveled the world for inspiration for this architectural vision, and he settled on a 12th century Moorish Alhambra Palace, the famous one in Granada, Spain, as his model. Smith purchased a prominent parcel in the heart of St. Augustine, and although not an architect by training, he designed every single detail of his exotic castle, which he dubbed Villa Zoraida. Perhaps his greatest gift to Florida was his persuading Henry Morrison Flagler to take roots in St. Augustine. Now, Flagler, who was the first president of Standard Oil of New Jersey and whose personal fortune far surpassed that of Smith, came to St. Augustine on his honeymoon and was so blown away by Smith's Villa Zoraida, that exotic little castle, that he offered to buy it. Smith assured Flagler that the house was not for sale. But with missionary zeal, Smith sketched the possibilities for Flagler to stay on and build his dreams in this subtropical paradise. By 1885, Flagler had given up his day-to-day involvement in Standard Oil to pursue his grandiose vision in Florida. He returned in St. Augustine and began construction of the stately pleasure dome that is now Flagler College, but originally was Flagler's 540-room Ponce de Leon Hotel. Upon its opening on January the 10th, 1888, it rapidly became the mecca for tourists from the northern states as well as the entire universe. But meanwhile, Franklin W. Smith had purchased the plot of land catter-corner to the Ponce de Leon, wherein he designed and constructed the five-story Casa Monica Hotel, thus launching a gaggle of other towering Spanish Moorish edifices that have continued to lure tourists to this city. The Casa Monica opened a week before the Ponce de Leon Hotel, but only three guests showed up. Some said that in order to discourage the rival hotel, Henry Flagler himself had ordered the railroad schedule delayed so that guests as well as hotel furniture were not showing up on time. Flagler's obsession with Florida continued to expand, necessitating his getting into the railroad business to transport tourists to the necklace of resorts he strung all the way down the Florida coast, stopping only when he ran out of land at Key West. More than any other person, Henry Morrison Flagler invented Florida as a tourist destination. He so dominated the states that critics accused him of believing that the abbreviation FLA stood for Flagler, not Florida. Thank you.
Clearly not the kind of thing you'd read about in a history book in school, but who's looking at school books? It's summer. Thank you, Wayne.
You'll find out more about St. Augustine's history at staugustinehistoricalsociety.org. And Wayne's going to be in the lobby after the show to answer any questions you may have.
If you got here a little bit early, you were able to listen to our next guests, ladies and gentlemen, Side Reel.
Wake up in the morning, yeah, got that pacifier bumping through my radio. Baby, I'm still snoring, yeah, kiss her on the forehead before I go. It's time to hit the road again, leave a letter on the pillow, then I'm out the door. Cause there's a million other places I know I could be, but none would be the same without you next to me. Oh, girl, you'll never know. Never know. I'll see you when I see ya. But damn, I hope the next time is sometime soon. I'm constantly thinking about ya. The way you light me up when you walk in the room. I know I've been gone for a while, and all I miss is your smile. But be strong, baby, cause I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back someday. Well, I can't wait till I can say that I'm here to stay. Cause I'll be back someday. Cause I'll
someday to worry what I'm doing. Cause there ain't nothing out here with losing you. You can owe me to it. Cause you know I'd be lying if it wasn't true. So you break out the candles. When I get back, we're gonna spend a lot of time alone. I like the ride, but I love the feeling of coming home. Oh, girl, you never know. Oh, girl, so you never know. Cause I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back, I'll be back someday. Cause I'll be back someday.
I'll be back.
Cause I'll be back someday. Before you wake up in the morning, yeah, pacifier will be pumping through your radio. You will still be snoring, yeah. Kiss you on the forehead, but I won't go.
You can catch these guys playing all around town all the time. And you can find out more about them at their website, SideReelMusic.net. They'll have some CDs for sale in the lobby after the show tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Kelby Siddons.
Where are you from?
For much of my life, I've answered this simple question with a complicated answer, a sort of compressed autobiography. Well, I was born in California and I lived in Louisiana before moving to Jacksonville in second grade because my dad was in the Navy, but I've spent summers in New Jersey and Maine as long as I can remember. Q raised eyebrows and a slow nod from my listener. It's more than the pushpin in the map he bargained for. Still, I rattled this off every time I was asked between the ages of 7 and 18.
Where are you from?
Maybe it was because I didn't totally identify with any of the places where I spent my childhood. California, I did not remember. Rather like my mother's womb, I have evidence I was there, but that didn't seem to be what the question was really asking. It seemed to be more about where you learn to be who you are.
Where you from?
In Maine, there are locals and there are summer people. I am a summer person, and since I didn't know what was going on with the Red Sox, locals properly inferred I had a long commute. In Louisiana, I was growing up with a mother from New Jersey who found it charming but totally bizarre to be called Miss Carol by all the neighborhood kids, who knew what a water spout was but pronounced it water spout, who did not make gumbo from memory but rather Grandma's Pennsylvania mush and scrapple. If you enjoy it, do not ask what's in it. My mother and I laughed about what it sounded like to literally have your sandwich dressed and live in a shotgun house. We laughed at these things, not derisively, but it was still a laughter of separation. We were not from or of these things. They merely surrounded us. I thought similar things of Jacksonville. When my classmates debuted, I could not for the life of me figure out why. And I was yelling, "Listen, you guys," to get everyone's attention before someone caught wise and bumped in with authoritative, "Listen, y'all." However, I wore flip-flops more often than not. I was on a first-name basis with several hurricanes, and this one time, my brother got stung by a scorpion that lived in his shirt drawer. So I decided, after over a decade of growing up Jacksonville, when I headed to college in Illinois, I'd finally commit to a simple answer to a simple question.
Where are you from?
The south side of Jacksonville, Florida, as sure as the St. John's River flows north. But my newfound sense of belonging was to be short-lived. During freshman orientation week, I quickly developed a new answer to rattle off, but this time it matched the question. Name, major, where are you from? Kelby Drama, Jacksonville, Florida. People pointed out to me that I said my state name weird. Not Florida, but Florida. At last, I had a dialect. I had a regional identity. I started throwing y'all around pretty liberally, which is what led me into conversation with Miss Tennessee. Oh, hey, I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. Y'all ready for the winters up here? We Southerners need a support group. She pursed her lips. I guess it's warm down there, but no offense, the rest of us don't really consider Florida part of the South. Then, I kid you not, she started in on her delicate sliver of pecan pie. Pecan pie, pecan pie, what is the right answer? What would make me worthy of your South? Well, I know what you're thinking, but it's not Disney. Where I'm from, it's practically Southern Georgia. She looked unimpressed. We have debutante balls. She gave me a polite smile that did not reach the eyes, put her fork down at an angle to indicate she was not yet finished, and wiped the corners of her mouth with the napkin she'd had on her lap. Of course, she had been a debutante. I felt like even more of a failure as I noticed she had spurned me while wearing pearl earrings. It was everything short of bless your heart. And why was it affecting me so much? It's one thing not to be able to decide where you're from or wanting to acknowledge that you are the product of more than one place. But for someone else to tell you that where you're from and who you are is not what you know it to be, well, that ain't Southern hospitality, y'all. She was kind of right anyway. Florida is its own thing, and so am I. After going to school in Illinois, I can't stop myself from ordering scrambled eggs with a flat A. So I guess I'm a cultural magpie. But Jacksonville is my chosen home. Still, I'll rattle off my origin story to anyone who will listen. Thank you.
You're listening to Swamp Radio, a homegrown, homespun mixture of music and phraseology from the North Florida region. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine. Writer and performer Robert Arley White and percussionist Charlotte Mabry have been making strange and beautiful music together in the area for the past 30 years.
What? They met in kindergarten.
Well, here they are with a fun and catchy tune called It's a Beautiful Life.
Did you count all the stars when you crossed that river in your beautiful, beautiful life? Did you sit in the sun? Did you burn? Did you shiver in your beautiful, beautiful life? In your beautiful life, your beautiful life. Well, it's a shiny, new, and beautiful life. That's a beautiful life, a beautiful life for you. Do you know how you feel? Are you still? Do you reel in your beautiful, beautiful life? Are you happy or sad? Do you talk to your dad in your beautiful, beautiful life? In your beautiful life, your beautiful life. Well, it's a shiny, new, and beautiful life. It's a beautiful life, a beautiful life. Oh. Do you know how you feel? Are you still? Do you reel? Happy or sad? Do you talk to your dad?
Robert Arley White and Charlotte Mabry. We were sitting around the writer's table talking about possible stories and segments for the summer show, and writer Tim Gilmore, who's with us tonight, had a quick and sweet tale about two sea lions. And here's our own Andy Nance to tell us about it.
Butch was the rock star of Marineland. But the world's first oceanarium was too small a stage for this California sea lion. A more appropriate-sized venue, he seemed to feel, was the whole state of Florida. Butch made his first escape in October of 1940, after performing tricks in captivity for 2 years. He swam south for about 70 miles before he hopped aboard a random fishing boat, and he ate most of the piles of mullet the fishermen had caught. His belly full, Butch grew sleepy. The fishermen brought him ashore. A crowd grew around him, and he soon resorted to the training that had brought him so much attention and fish before. He balanced a beach ball on his nose and ran back and forth before the crowd, barking and clapping his flippers. Marineland had put out a call for Butch's capture and return, and he soon found himself back in the oceanarium. Not 6 months later, Butch escaped again. Now, Floridians who knew nothing of marine land or of sea lions reported sightings of a sea monster along Florida's Big Dig, the Atlantic Intracoastal Waterway between Jacksonville and Miami. And that sea monster was Butch, who swam through the inland coastal system of canals, rivers, sounds, and bays 300 miles to Miami in little more than a week. There, fishermen and the captains of charter boats fed him nightly. His playful and charismatic personality attracted tourists ready to board the charters, so they refused to send Butch back to Marineland. Marineland sent a truck and trailer down to Miami, outfitted with a double cage. One cage was empty and open, and in the adjacent cage was Butch's Marineland mate, Fanny, barking sorrowfully and frantically. Fanny drew Butch toward her, and then the Marinelanders and the charter boat captains fought for Butch's soul. When he heard Fanny barking, he stuck his head up from the water beneath the nearby pier, swam to her, ducked back under, and darted to the unoccupied cage beside her. Well, the charter captains called out to him. They backed their boats up and entreated him with armloads of freshly caught fish, yelling, "Don't do it, Butch! Don't go in there!" They dove into the water and surrounded him with fish. Butch looked up at Fanny, tragic sorrow and guilt in his eyes, and dove ashamedly into the great feast of fish laid before him. He ate and ate and ate and ended up beneath the waterfront restaurant pier where he fell asleep, exhausted, full of fish, ashamed at his disloyalty, a sad wreck of his domestic ambition. Though Marineland lured him back with Fanny and fish, they soon sold all their sea lions. Bottlenose dolphins would become part of Marineland's legacy. But no records exist to show what happened to Fanny and Butch. Maybe they retired to do lounge acts in Las Vegas. Or died spectacular outlaws like Bonnie and Clyde. But I like to picture them, post-Marineland, as fat, bad-breathed and sassy, sunning their slippery blubber and gregarious recumbent numbers the way free sea lions will on some rocky coastal paradise. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Tim will be out in the lobby after the show. Once again, here is Side Reel.
Get the feeling that you're feeling the same way. So hey, we've been at it all day, and I don't mind running around in circles if we end in the same place, the same place.
Side Reel. St. Augustine resident Laura Lee Smith made quite a splash with her debut novel, Heart of Palm, set in a small town in North Florida. It chronicles the ups and downs of Arla Bolton as she weathers a life full of unexpected turns. And here to perform the opening moments of this wonderful work is actress Mandy Proctor.
Prologue, March 1964. Most people never understood why Arla went and married a Bravo. The world genuflected before her. She was beautiful then. Skin like white linen, blue-blooded and hot-tempered, stood a full 6 feet tall in her pink Capizio flats. She could have had so much more. Leon Fontaine, that sweet young man, perfectly lovesick over her and set up so nice like he was in his father's law practice. He bought her a diamond ring. She thanked him and had it made into a pendant. Donnie Pelissier, who took her to senior prom, got to second base, and then went off to seminary at Our Lady Perpetual Help up in Savannah. He wasn't there even a week when he nearly went crazy with longing for her. He embarked on an aggressive and frantic spiritual reckoning, reevaluated the munificent bodily benefits of lay service, and then he hitchhiked back home to be with Arla. Who wouldn't have him? When she told her parents, Mr. and Mrs. James Bolton of St. Augustine's Davis Shores, that she intended to marry Dean Bravo, her mother put her hands to her face and her father went for the scotch. This was 1964, the day before Arla's 18th birthday, just off the lanai. The azaleas were in full bloom, a wash of magenta against the somber green weave of the lawn. Oh, Arla, don't do this to us. Are you knocked up? James said. Vera began to cry. I am not knocked up, my lord, you people. She stood before them, all lightness and promise, with sass, that soft red hair that made you forget what you were going to say next. But Arla, he's a Bravo. He will ruin you. Mon Dieu, you're so dramatic. Arla had lately adopted an affectation of using French colloquialisms, enjoying the way they slid off her tongue, the way they suggested some vague seduction, some abstract sensuality that she'd learned was a powerful currency. Men don't ruin women. Daddy didn't ruin you, did he? She opened her eyes wide, stared at her mother, tilted her head a bit. Oh, he wants your money, James said. Oh, don't be ridiculous. He wants me. Her eyes narrowed when she said this. James ran a hand across his eyes and Vera hunched over the chaise, clutching her shoulders. You might could congratulate me, Arla said. Here I'm going to be a married woman and all. She sat down and picked at a scab at her knee. James stared at her and jumped when an ice cube in his glass shifted position. Vera wept. I love him, Mother. Oh, Arla! Vera said. She reached for a tissue and blew her nose. Dean Bravo! Love won't be enough. The wedding was in September. They had a full mass at high noon in a cathedral basilica at St. Augustine. The bride wore an ivory silk A-line gown with a ruched bodice, an empire waist, and a chapel-length train. The groom wore a borrowed suit and a splash of Old Spice. The bride's mother wore a black veil of Italian lace. James paid for all of it, but he had stopped looking at his daughter in the eye. He walked her down the aisle and Arla took his arm awkwardly. She could not remember the last time she touched her father. She was embarrassed by the contact, the intimacy, the way he stiffened when her fingers closed around his elbow. It was a relief when they reached the chancel and she could let him go. Do you? Said the priest to Arla. I do, said Arla. Do you, said the priest to Dean. Damn straight. Dean said, he winked at Arla. Her breath caught at the sight of him. The way he looked right at her, that clear and perfect desire in his eyes, as if nobody else was there in the church watching. She thought briefly about disappointment and ruination and all that, but it was no matter. With Dean here before her, the world was a fine place, and life the prettiest adventure indeed. Thank you.
Laura Lee Smith will be on hand in the lobby to sign copies of her book just after the show.
I met with my friend Kim Schneps down here to plan our St. Augustine gig. After we finished our meeting, she said, "I think we have time for a hippo." Well, I do anyway, and I think you should too. We hopped in the car, and somehow the parking god smiled on us, and we ended up with a parking spot just at the end of Hippolyta Street, where Stephen DeMare makes his wonderfully wacky and mighty tasty gourmet popsicles. One pop, and I was hooked. I called Stephen up, and I asked him if he'd be willing to come and give us the scoop on what makes this icy treat so darn yummy. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Stephen DeMare. Hey, Stephen, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks, Ian.
So this all started out of a conversation on an airplane. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it did. So I was working in Montana a few years ago and was riding back for a friend's wedding on an airplane. And normally on airplanes, you know, you get your headphones on or you fall asleep or anything to avoid talking to the people around you. And this time the woman engaged me before I could get my headphones on. So we started chatting, and she was really nice, and we were talking about, oh, what do I want to do with my life? And at that time, I wanted to open a coffee shop. I'm a huge coffee nerd, and I thought this will be perfect for me. And she said, no, you shouldn't open a coffee shop. You live in Florida. You should open a gourmet popsicle shop. And I'm thinking, you know, let's keep our ideas to ourselves. This is my idea, you know? And but then the more she started talking about some different flavors that she had, about these two Mexican sisters in Nashville that had done a similar thing, my mind just started running. And it really hasn't stopped since then.
So you kind of set up your own laboratory for popsicles. And what was the first flavor you tried out?
Well, our lab was very technical. I was working in a hotel on Big Sky Mountain, and so the lab was the kitchen there and an ice cube tray. And the very first flavor I did was the craziest one I could find on the internet, because I thought, I'm going to try the weirdest one, and if this one works, then there might be something here. So it was cucumber jalapeno was the very first one. And I made it in my little ice mold trays, off the clock. And
yeah.
And then served it to the hotel guests, and they loved it. So I said, okay, I think there's something here.
So you returned to St. Augustine, and you shared your vision with your family and friends. How did they react?
I mean, like any intelligent person would, they thought it was a terrible idea. So at first, and then as I explained it, and we got to try some and come up with some flavors, they all came on board. So my friends and family were really huge in helping provide, I think, some of the a lot of the support that I needed to open a concept that was a bit out there.
I've been in one of your shops. He's got several here. And the biggest dilemma is figuring out which one you want to try. You have so many exotic flavors. How is it you develop these flavors?
So, I mean, the main way that we develop the flavors is by starting with a fruit that's in season that we can get and then trying to riff on that. So we look at meals that we've had. We look online for inspiration. And about half of the recipes that we have come from fans, people that come in, that have had the product and say, oh, wow, you know what? This would be a great idea. And I think that's really great because other people kind of catch on to the fun of it. They get the same kind of creative bug that I got when I first kind of considered the idea. And so a lot of our flavors come from people going, oh, wow, have you ever tried rhubarb with nectarine? And we're like, oh, wow, no, we haven't. That's a great idea.
You were telling me about one customer, a soldier, who had an interesting suggestion.
Yeah, we had this one guy come in who had spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and he came in and said, oh, I fell in love with pistachio rose water ice cream when I was in Dubai. And we said, okay, yeah, we can try that, sure. I mean, it's weird, but we'll try it. We'll try anything. And so we put it together. We found some rose water. We put some pistachios and some coconut. And it was phenomenal. And it's really one of our better-selling flavors now.
So I have to ask, what is the secret to making a peach chipotle popsicle?
I mean, the main secret, that what underpins what we do, is just using like fresh, authentic ingredients and keeping that ingredient list very short. And beyond that, we freeze the popsicles very quickly, which contributes to making really good texture. But chipotle peach is, we've actually made our own chipotles in-house, bought the jalapenos, smoked them, dried them, and then you combine that with some fresh peaches, peak season, and we just freeze it once, and it just kind of captures this beautiful moment. And so that's, and it's very spicy too. So
he really is, he's a flavor pioneer, and he's here. We're so lucky to have him. Stephen Damari, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Hippo Pops are available for purchase right out in front of the theater just after the show. And now for a segment of the show we call Fitting Words, which features a North Florida poet. Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Tiffany Melanson.
Good evening. I'm going to share two poems with you tonight, both of which are inspired by my favorite place on the planet, my grandmother's house. Orange Blossom, Grandmother's House. Until we pulled one open, we thought the smell came from the petals. We found the patch of bunched bushes and a pocket of shade and a rusted metal fence to lean against. Along the dirt road that led to the house, I watched you peel back each petal to expose strings of sticky stamen before pulling them slowly from its center. You turned the ends over and dragged each sinewy strand across your tongue, hungry for the origin of its smell. Just yesterday, I walked the same empty road to her house, searching the half-hung fence for what was left as the froth of sweet honey drifted by before turning to thick dust. The Creek, Grandmother's House. We take the road hard in our car, dust and tread marks billowing around us like smoke. Not like when we were kids and walked as slow as possible, examining the imprints of our bare feet in the dirt road as we went. As we round the tight corner that leads to a shallow creek bed, I enter my body like a deep breath. Burdens laid down along the roadside like fat bunches of blackberry, so heavy they choke the razor wire fence. Everywhere but here, I am lost to myself. I exit the car at the creek bed, 90-degree heat throbbing against rust-colored water, place my entire face against the wet surface of myself, taste the sulfur on my parched tongue, and drink. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiffany. You can read more of Tiffany's poetry at her website, tiffanybelanson.com, and on our contributors page. You're listening to Swamp Radio. Dive on in, y'all. The water's fine. North Florida playwright Adai Moon's play, She Calls Up the Sun, is set among the Gullah people of the coastal south. Here's our own Tony Phillips with a monologue.
Then who are you? We ain't nothing but the sum total of all the folks that came before us. Now your Nana, Miss Sarah, she held an image in her mind, knew ahead of time how that doll would look, the size, the shape, and color. She would just pick up that needle and thread and keep right on living. The little house is packed with all these women folk all the time. women laughing, gossiping, straightening hair, cooking up some food. It's our meeting place. The men got peats. All the women would be up in that little house of yours. Good times. Miss Sarah counsels some woman about her problems, praying for her, and sewing the entire time. Every once in a while, she looks at what she's making and laughs. A mess of thread and fabric always surprises her what she sees. It's a journey, a place to rest, watching the road unfold as she goes along. Those were the most beautiful dolls I've ever seen. Your mama was the same way. You the last one, child. These eyes getting old. Can barely thread a needle, much less finish a whole piece. You've got to be the one to move us forward. I was never any good at making dolls. But you, it's in your blood. You just gotta accept it. Thank you.
In all his work, Moon weaves a kind of spell with mundane language and potent images to create a landscape in which the past and the present are always commingling. Here's our own David Gerard with another piece from the play.
Yeah, my baby girl. Met her mom at an old blues joint down in Sarasota. Prettiest little red gal I'd ever seen. Right out of college. All educated with a bunch of fancy talk. Sedated little thing. Peculiar too. Walks around all the time with a parasol. Regardless of the weather. Sun shining, gray skies. Even at night. Always got that parasol. Makes me laugh. Have to hide that damn thing the first time we make love. Nah, that was something else. Early morning. Look into her eyes, I melt. I feel her all around me. Nothing but an ocean of sweat. Our flesh, our tears. Ain't never been no religious man, but it's the closest thing to prayer I've ever experienced. Breath and sound. One unending circle. Sound comes out of nowhere. I see her lips moving, but the sound, it comes from some other place. Her pores, strands of hair, the room itself. Ain't never heard nothing like this before. And I feel this warmth slowly rise up my spine. And the room swims in light. Sun, sound. Her voice wakes up the sun. When she's pregnant with Marie, she sings all the time. I rest my head on her belly. Her voice and the rhythm of my little girl's heart. It's no wonder Marie comes out singing. At night, I rock my baby girl in my arms. Tiny little thing. She sings me to sleep. I don't think I've slept since. Walking the earth in a daze, blinded by memory, parasols. See, they protect you from yourself. Sometimes the light is too bright. At least it was for me. What can a man do for a woman who calls up the sun? Thank you.
Summer rain in Florida. Clouds shadow and depart in waves. As drips of rain come and go, sounding on a single leafless branch. Outside my window. It reaches through a clump of thin saplings from the vacant lot next door. All is still but this. How many days has the slow dripping begged me from this spot. All day I am restless as that leafless branch, reaching for a patch of stale sunlight and the lukewarm taste of slow rain dripping from the tip of another tree's limb. Thank you.
Well, that is about all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us in the swamp. You can look for this broadcast next month. Our special thanks to Flagler College, Carl Liberatore, and the good folks of St. Augustine. Give yourselves a round of applause. This broadcast was made possible by the Cultural Council of Greater Jacksonville's Spark Grant Program. We'll be back down this way at the holidays for a Swamp Radio Christmas. Until then, we'll see you on the radio. Lauren's going to take us out with an oldie but a goodie.
I was standing by my window on a cold and cloudy day when I saw that hearse come rolling for to carry my mother away with a circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by. There's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. Oh, I said to that undertaker, undertaker, please drive slow. For that lady you are hauling, oh, I hate to see her go. Well, the
oh, I followed close behind her, tried to hold up and be brave, but I could not hide my sorrow when they laid her in the grave.
By and by, Lord, by and by, there's a better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky. A better home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Good night. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Our director for this show was Christopher Farrell. Our production manager is Hurley Winkler. Our music director is Craig Spurko. Our sound engineer is Don Ringhofer of Stay Tuned Studios.
Join us for A Swamp Radio Christmas, Sunday, December 21st at the Florida Theater at 3 p.m. For tickets and information, go to swampradiojax.com.